Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled in shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poet we are today. So here we are on Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what tie the room together. Get comfortable. What you're about to hear is the poetry we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can talk to us in the chat and you can read the poems as we do. I'm Afaziana, and with me I have Daniel Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hi, I think you do. I think I might be here.
You are. You exist.
Excellent. That's pretty much all I do, so I'm glad I still do that.
You do more than that, but existing is the first step.
Exactly.
There were apparently some tech issues, but it seems like we're good. You're here. I believe we're also going to have Infinite Destruction said that he was going to give us a call.
Excellent.
Who knows? Perhaps Pam. She's a regular. So it looks like it's going to be a fun night. It's been a while.
Of course. It has been. It has been. Yes. So how's life? Okay.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from the excitement of the weekend. I went to Vancouver for Fan Expo, which is basically Comic-Con, and it was super fun. I got in free because I was doing something with my medieval reenactment group. So I was working. I was, you know, I had to be at my booth, and I had to take care of the ERIC where there were fighters, including my husband, who were doing sword fighting, and I just had to make sure that everyone was a safe distance away for our demonstrations. So I was you know, occupied, but in between I had little breaks where I spied on what was going on in the con, and it was really exciting. Too much of a crowd for me. I mean, I loved it, but also I get sensory overload, so the rest of this week I've just kind of been like, I want to be alone. But you know, that's how I am. How was your week?
Yeah, very busy, very busy. I'm like literally in a daze right now because I tried to take a nap before this because I'm a little tired, and I just woke up, and I'm like, I am literally like, what is happening? What's going on? Am I alive? So when you were asking me if I exist, that was actually an honest statement. But I do like, I love Fan Expo. I try to go to the one in Boston all the time. My wife and I went for the first time to the Rhode Island one by ourselves, because usually it's me and my son, or it used to be the three of us, and the Fan Expo in Rhode Island, which was a lot of fun, but I'm definitely a fan of those things. I think they're great. So yeah, I'm excited to try to go to the one in the Boston and Rhode Island ones this year. So those are always fun. Great crowd, great people, and yes, the crowds get overwhelming sometimes, but it's usually a good crowd of people. Like the people are usually very friendly and nice, so that's always good.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. But we have lots of fun poetry tonight. And we should probably get started.
We have another caller, and I'm going to guess it's Robbie because it has the hand raised. And whenever the hand is raised, it's Robbie. Let's see if it is.
Yes.
Robbie, is that you?
Yes. It's funny. I ended up, I don't know how I got to calling it that, but I called it the spanking hand.
Somehow, there's a little hand, it's you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wish I could have a symbol for each person. I remember symbols better than numbers.
Prince, right? It's funny, mm-hmm. I noticed BTR doing this thing where some shows are like there's tech issues, and some shows they won't be able to call in, and then other shows can. It's so weird. It's like, and so, and it kind of almost like rotates. It's like, and then on another night, oh, that other show, they're able to call in, but then the other, the show that everyone else was able to call into, they can't.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Blog Talk Radio, what the problems have been having are. I'm not really sure what that is. We had problems for a while, if you guys remember. There was crazy tech issues, but,
yeah.
You know, it's the,
yeah. I saw that
you know.
Somewhere else, though, and that's why I was giving a heads up, but, anyways.
But even with that, according to the link, we're still number three on Blog Talk Radio. So that's we're coming for you, Seth Meyers. My goal, I want to beat Seth Meyers. He's always number one, but still.
There's somewhere on Blog Talk where they have like your stats for like the number of hours that you've listened and called in and all that. And I was like at an insane number. I was at like 10,000 or something like that. I'm 48 now, and I've called into Blog Talk for poetry shows since I was like around 20 years old.
Oh wow, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I am not
excellent.
I'm a grizzled veteran.
Of course, the number three means it's all of Late Night Poets together, but hey, we are one big family here, so.
Yeah,
well,
we're all.
You're an expert caller. All right, so unless we have any other guests, let's get cranking, I think.
All right, the first prompt is, a tree with strong roots laughs at storms. And this is a Malay proverb.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have a specific person because it was something that was passed on through oral tradition. And our first entry for that is by Jenny the Deep. So this is the poem, Ameliorating Fearlessly, by Jenny the Deep. Echoes of laughter spread, because you're different. Just laugh back at them for being indifferent. Better to be a lone wolf than somebody's sheep, strong and unscathed from narcissist schemes. Don't lose your authenticity trying to be the same. Seeking approval will only make you drive yourself insane. Hold your head up high and be true to you. Wave goodbye to the doubters in your rear view. Not everyone will appreciate or like you, but be appreciative towards those who do. A better world is possible by those ameliorating, spreading love and acceptance instead of hating. End poem.
Excellent. Excellent read. And shouldn't it be, a tree with strong roots laughs at storms and drinks of its wrath? I like that. I just added something to the proverb. I don't know what it means, but I just added something to the proverb. And she says, inspired by Anne Frank quote, also goes with ugly ducking prompt about accepting yourself, also goes with the problem on laughing at the wind, a.k.a. dangers. So, yeah, she took a lot of the prompt inspired other prompts and other things, which, you know, was great. It's being strong in adversity, right? And I think it's, you know, I think it's great, and I'm going to acknowledge my stupidity and let either Robbie or my friend, the librarian here, tell me what ameliorating means, because I don't know. So I'm not going to look it up. I'm going to let you guys tell me what it means. But I like the word. I like the sound of the word.
It means to improve. It's a French word.
Excellent. There you go. Well, that's why, because I don't really even understand most English words, so I wouldn't know French. So yeah, I really like the theme of it, and if authenticity try to be the same, seeking approval will make you drive insane. And you know, it is really interesting with fakeness that's in the world and how we are fake. And I think about it a lot. I try very hard to just be myself all the time. Can't 100%. I'm a manager at work where I work, so I'm very, very, very real with them. But, you know, I hold back a little bit, definitely, because I'm at work and I have to be strong, right? If I'm having a bad day, I still have to be strong because I'm the boss type of thing. But you always wonder, right? Like, I'll just take work because I'm assuming no one's listening to me. But, you know, most people are very nice to me and they talk to me. But you always wonder, I mean, just being nice because I'm the boss and I can, you know, fire them and discipline them and that type of thing? Or are they actually being nice? You know, you always wonder if people are being fake. And, you know, there's all kinds of sayings that say, right, true friends are the ones that, you know, stick with you when you're being yourself or when you're in your down times. And, you know, not everyone will appreciate you, but be appreciative towards those who do, which is really true. If, you know, the ones that really know you and stick with you and stay with you when you're being you. are the ones that, you know, that you can be there for, that are your true friends. And you know, trying to be yourself fearlessly is a very hard thing to do, putting yourself out there. I think most people, if, you know, put on little, the who call it an emerence front, just to try to survive and not have to put yourself out there. So interesting, great rhyming, Jenny. I really like it. I appreciate it. Robbie, go for it.
One part, sometimes life informs your viewpoint, especially if it's something newer and it's fresh in your mind. And the thing that I really zeroed in, like an arrow, was about not being part of a narcissist's schemes. because my eyes have been open to narcissists and narcissism. I don't know any myself that are clinically narcissistic, at least as far as I know. Like, you know, maybe there's someone that is out there that has that diagnosis, but I don't know it. But I know, like, a very good friend who had an ex who was a narcissist. And I used to think that narcissism was, like, you know, quote-unquote just, like, people with a self-aggrandized sort of viewpoint of themselves, but I didn't realize how bad and actually dangerous it can be. How they use other people as stepping stones, and they kind of, yeah, just like kind of that using sort of dynamic. And so I really zeroed in on that part. And the whole poem overall just made me think of what it means to be better and self-improved, because there's so many ways that you can self-improve. And sometimes I like just the title, ameliorating fearlessly, like just going for it, not having any fear to do it. And it's just funny that, like, I was thinking this to myself. I've had like two or three people say that, you know, you're doing a lot better than you see that you are, Rob. Like they say, well, you know, you went through this one thing and you're like recovering from it so much faster than I've seen other people do. Like, cause like I had to take care of my dad. Right. And like one of my friends was saying, like, you're just motoring along so much faster than a lot of people in that situation would. And so it's interesting to me to think about that perception of things. And that made me think of this too, is like, let your perception of self-improvement can be colored by your own experience. It's hard to be objective. You can be doing like fantastically well, but especially if you have a perfectionistic personality, you can be harmful to yourself in like, well, I should be doing a little better. I should be doing a little better. And everybody else is like, you know, dude, you're doing it. You're doing better than 90% of the people I know. Give yourself a break. So it made me think of that too, both on a personal level and on a broader sort of psychological level.
Excellent, excellent. I really like when poetry like did for you and for me, I think, too, it just kind of hit these personal notes. And I'm going to be very self-deprecating today and say that not only did I show my ignorance with the very first poem of not knowing that word, but it was the very first word of the evening, so I'm just going to throw that out there. So we have Infinite Destruction, which... looks like his name might be Romeo by Phil on the board, at least. So, hey, guys, how are we doing? Great to hear you. And I don't know if Infinite called in or not. There was a rumor that he might. But glad you're on the board, at least.
Do you have me unmuted?
Hi, ID.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Hello, Infinite.
Hey, great to have you. Did you get to hear the poem?
I did not. I phoned in while y'all were mid-conversation on it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries at all. No worries at all. So that brings us to you, Faizy.
All right. Well, as much as I know Dan struggled with the first word, I love that word, partly because I grew up in French school, so améliorer is just like came naturally. And, you know, I actually have not used the word in English. So ameliorating sounded a little bit odd to me. And I'm like, but I just assumed it went the same as in French. And yeah, I like when words that were French get turned into English, just because I get to do my weird half French, half English, the way that my brain works. Not great in either language, but the mix of it, I flows nicely in my head. I was also drawn to the narcissist part, like Robbie, because I have an ex-boyfriend who is a narcissist, and lots of experience with that, and coming out unscathed is impressive, Jenny. That's a thing you can do. so I really like that, the attitude of, you know, being able to just keep on growing and keep on making things better and to not let anyone drag you down from that. Very nice, Jenny. So great to have a poem from you in our contest. And our next one, we actually have an audio. So I'm going to play an audio by Eric Svensson. And, ooh, he has a few on the board here. Let me get the one that's actually for us.
Has there ever been a woman
May
that
your roots be congruent with your branches. Rest a while in the shade of your favorite tree. Farmlad poet planted between and betwixt four oaks. Grew into gigantic sentinels over a century plus. From babe to boy to bard to this day, these mighty oak sentinels praise the heavens. Lean in against the trunk of your beloved tree. Reflect on your earthly ring years. See how feast and famine imprinted, marked each year as with your buddy tree. Swings, songs, and farm boy sport between green foliage. Mighty oak ring years diligently record balmy summer days and mighty winter storms. 122 years of life, each oak guardian a living library with endless tales. Roots congruent with tenacious umbrella branches. Congruency of roots and branches is my wish for you. Recognition and acceptance of life patterns. Cycles endured by roots anchored in fertile soil. Sturdy branches to accommodate, shelter your reality. May your epiphany echo through time's corridors. End poem.
Thank you for the audio, Eric. If anyone can't make it to the show live but would like to share their voice, we do take audios, something by SoundCloud or anywhere where you're going to give us the MP3, so we can do that. I really enjoyed the line from babe to boy to bard, partly because I like alliteration, but also just the idea of, like, you know, the bard was always a natural step there. You're the baby, you're the boy, and then you grow up into being a bard. It's not like boy and then man and then bard maybe later. It starts off that way. I mean, even when he was planted, farm lad poet planted between. He was already going to be a poet when they planted him. That was the seed that was put there. I also really liked them described as sentinels. There's like this protective keeper of things in these trees that are watching over him as he grows. That last line was really great too. May your epiphany echo through time's corridors. I really enjoy that. ID, would you like to comment?
Yes, I will. One second. Let me get back over here to the piece. You caught me. I was grabbing a blanket. I'm a little cold. all right, so roots congruent with tenacious umbrella branches. I don't know. I just that one line stood out to me, and I kept trying to figure out exactly why it was standing out to me, but I think it's just the imagery of that and what that means. It's basically that, you know, that you're from where you grow up, how strong your roots are, may also your branches, you know, how much you bloom, how much you grow, be just as wide and as strong as, you know, from whence you come. And I really enjoyed this overall piece. It was a great, just almost like a coming of man type deal. And, you know, and I think it was a really great piece, and I enjoyed it.
I agree. Robbie, would you like to comment?
What I focused on in this particular one was I got a sense of kind of your own guardianship, sort of, or kind of being in charge of your own garden, so to speak, in terms of growth. Like, is saying something about, let me see, I'm not too sure if I can find it right now. Somewhere along here, it talks about, like your own branch or your own tree. And it says here at the end, sturdy branches to accommodate, shelter your reality. And I always get, like, I say to myself, I always get that feeling in my own life of being my own star. Sort of the idea of, like, you know, you always put your, and I get that sense in this poem too, that it's not even as much a sense of responsibility to put your own best foot forward on your own behalf, but just the feeling that it's kind of like a wish for that in this poem. And it's a bit, to me, a sense of that's what's naturally for that person in this poem, or that it feels like that he's hoping that will be the natural state for that person in this poem, that they can be their own tree, they can be their own sturdiness. Sorry about that. I don't know if I misread that or not, but that's partly at least what I got.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, back to you.
Back to me. Excellent. I really like Eric a lot. I've written him multiple times and asked him questions on it, and he kind of always points out his very, very kind of deep and almost abstract like descriptions. I think this one is one of his more straightforward, which I really like. I like when people do different things. And yeah, I think it's to me, it's kind of talking about your, you know, talking about the rings, the years, and how everything adds up. But I think he talks about that as your strength. And, you know, we've talked on this show, or at least I have many times, about that being your weakness, where you kind of, you get beat down and you kind of, you know, you're pummeled with all the world. But it's also your strength. It's your experience in the world. And I think that's what he's kind of talking about, which I like. And I also like I just like the word bard. Anything that's Old English that makes me think like I'm in the medieval times makes me happy. The congruency and congruent roots and tenacious with umbrella branches is very interesting to me. And that's almost like the roots, again, your experience coming together and protecting you like an umbrella. Because you know, we're talking about the storm, and that's what kind of protects you is your experience. And it does happen. I mean, I'm, you know, at least much older than Ephesiana. I'm not sure about Robbie and everybody else that's listening here, but I, you know, I do find that even though I'm, you know, still as ignorant as any human being, I do have some experience that does help me through the world to survive a little bit better. And having all that come together to protect you in the storms, I think is really good. So, and then may your epiphany echo through time's corridors is almost like talking about immortality, which I really like. So he's really got some great metaphors here and really, really interesting his thoughts, which is what Eric always does. And Eric, I love your voice too. I could listen to you talk all day. So thanks for sending the SoundCloud. Alrighty. I think that's the group. Oh, and we also have Poeta DiCabria on the board and Marius Alexandru on the board. So we're rocking over here.
We are. And both of them have poems in our lineup tonight. So, Dan, how about I get you to read the one by Poeta DiCabria?
Hey, just real quick to add to something that he had said about, you know, all of your experiences coming together a really great quote. I don't know who it's by, but it was saying that life is like a photograph. It develops from negatives. And I don't know, you didn't think of it, and I think that that definitely fits this poem, that, you know, all of the things you go through is what, good or bad, is what makes you who you are. And anyway, go ahead.
That's
I'm
true.
Sorry.
No,
that's
great.
Good. Thank
that's
you.
That's a great comment. Absolutely. And Robbie says he's older than he sounds. He's 48, which, yes, you definitely don't sound 48, but I still have you beat by many a year. I actually have a new I've decided, and this was many years ago, I don't want to know how old I am. I'm not, like, scared. I just, why? And my other thing I do is I don't say how old I am. I say what level I'm at, like a video game. It just sounds better. That way, when I reach level, like, 75, it sounds like I'm, you know, I did something, and I just have to beat another boss. But anyway. No, great point. Thanks for adding. That's just the way I think. Thanks for adding that on. I love when this turns into discussions. All right, so Poeta de Cabria, I'm probably not pronouncing that with the correct accent, and I apologize. This is called Roots of My Raising. Away I must go through, though leaving makes me want to weep. Behind I must leave everything, starving cattle and sheep. Cruel Mother Nature has been, God, how does she sleep? Doomed if I stay here, my home is becoming a scrap heap. Finding it hard to go, yes, the roots of my raising run deep. End poem.
Excellent read. End poem. Trippy image that he has with it, where the guy has all the, he's walking like he's part tree, the roots. Oh, it's like a centaur, but tree. Okay. Looking away from the picture, back to the poem. It's a distracting picture. I like that it's really short lines and that it's centered. It's like it draws my eye, just like very focused on it. It's super direct. Behind I must leave everything, starving cattle and sheep. It seems like marching along and just doing what he has to do. He's going away. And that's like straight line of a poem, very brief lines, right down the middle, feels like it suits what it's saying. It's a march away. The roots of my raising run deep, because it is hard to leave when you have those deep roots. And I like that it questions it. How does she sleep? Is it hard to go? There are those questions within it that those are the longest parts. It's making you wonder, like, should I pause? Is there something there that's holding me back? But then recognizing that you can't. My home is becoming a scrap heap. That's a hard thing. I thought the format worked really well with what it's saying. Robbie, what were your thoughts?
I enjoyed the idea of the necessity of leaving. Sometimes you don't want to, but you have to. It's just part of the growth process. And the picture, I think, really went along well with the poem. It kind of informed the contents of the poem in a nice way. And there's a funny little thing that occurred to me here, or that happened for me, that it's obvious to me that wasn't the intention of either the poem or the picture, but because of the angle and everything, like those wooden legs that he has, like the two back ones, almost make it look like a bicycle wheel. And they say about bicycles, like, they're a trippy invention because they actually, it seems like a simple thing, but because of physics and that, and the way it works, they don't really know how bikes actually work. Like, from an absolute physics point of view, they're actually not supposed to be able to work. And so when I saw that unintended element in the picture, and I thought of the poem, I thought about how, you know, like, sometimes you don't know how you will move forward or how you are moving forward, but it's just like an organic process. It just happens. Like you see yourself, you know, it's almost like a don't overthink it sort of a thing. Like you just got to press on and, you know, maybe you make a plan, but you just let that go afterwards. You say, okay, this is my plan. I'm just going to go and, you know, and things will happen as they may. And I also like it says, like, cruel Mother Nature has been. God, how does she sleep? And kind of the idea of how when you're making progress in that, it's just there's that feeling of impartiality by the universe, or just like the universe isn't really involved. It's like this impartial observer, and it feels cruel because, you know, it just, even though it doesn't interfere, it doesn't help either, right? And I think that's the cruel part, is some of you want help in that, but the universe isn't there to do that for you. Or well, in this case, Mother Nature, but I also think of the universe.
That's cool. Infinite Destruction, what are your thoughts?
This definitely makes me think of the fact that I left my hometown behind simply because it is a small town, but it started to be overrun by drugs and gang activity and a bunch of other negative things. And I just did not feel like it was conducive with the direction of my life that I wanted to go. And yet and still, it was hard to leave because it was, you know, everything I kind of knew. It was all that, it was familiar. And in this, I feel the part where it says that, you know, finding it hard to go, you know, and then my home is becoming a scrap heap. Why is it hard to go? Because, you know, the roots of my raising, they run deep, you know, and I get this poem as far as, you know, how, you know, it's a struggle when you're having to move forward in life away from something that you want, that maybe you built and worked so hard to have, and you realize that it's never going to be what you thought it was going to be. And maybe I took a sadder viewpoint of this, but, you know, maybe the brightness is in what the future lies ahead from this piece, you know, going forward. And so I think it was a great piece. I too like the structure. It really drives your view down the page, like you said, Af. And the image is very trippy and goes very well with it. It's the roots run deep, but the roots are running dry. And I got to get away before I'm consumed by it entirely. And it was a great piece. I really enjoyed it.
I was going to say that when you spoke on like why it's hard to leave, it's funny. Sometimes there's this weird, eerie habituation that we develop. And it's like, even though something sucks, it's familiar to us. So, the familiar is at least we know what we're dealing with. Like, I remember a long time ago, one of my first jobs, and I just hated it, and I was, like, treated badly there and that. And someone said, well, yeah, you know, you hate it here, but you're staying. And she wasn't chastising me. She was just making an observation. She says, you don't want to leave, or you're not leaving because it's familiar to you. And that's really stuck with me. And it's a really bizarre thing that the human psychology does when something is so crappy, but part of us doesn't want to leave because at least it's a known element. It's kind of like the devil, you know, right? So that's that came to my mind when you were talking about, you know, why is it so hard to leave?
Interesting. Oh. Love it, both of you. I like that the conversation is happening here, and I actually really like the sad take that you took on it, Infinite Destruction. I thought it worked out really well, and it changed what you said, kind of changed how I looked at the poem, but in a good way. It's nice to hear other perspectives. Daniel Deschino, you read it for us. What did you think?
Afasiana, yes, I did. I agree with the gentleman here. It is, you know, that's a classic thing, right? I always think of the, you know, you think of the abused woman or man, doesn't matter who, doesn't leave because it's just easier to go back, right? Even though it's horrible, even though they might want to leave, it's like, oh, I'll just go back because I know, I understand that world. It can be hard to leave. And this is a very interesting take, I think, I thought, on the prompt. Because it is talking about roots protecting you, but protecting you in a way where you're stuck there, right? And so they have to go, but you don't want to go because your roots are deep, because you have that, and you always have that, right? If you've ever, I don't know if any of you still live in the town that you grew up in, but you know, when I go back there, you still remember it. Your roots are still there. It's a huge part of you. I don't live far from the town that I grew up in. When I go back there, I feel like a little, like, not like a kid, but I just feel like I never left. Like, it's just something that's always with you. And that happens. I like a lot about this. I do like the short lines as well, the one word lines. I do like whatever people refer to God as she, even though I'm a guy. I do, that makes me happy because that's, makes more sense for God to be a she to me, even though that might be blasphemous, just the way I think. And cruel Mother Nature, how does she sleep? So almost talking about how, well, Mother Nature is as sheep asleep, but say God, how she sleep? Maybe God is the, but I still think that's what he's talking about. And by the way, I was thinking Porter. I think I called the she, but Porter is Stanley Billing, I believe. So he. But interesting how they're talking about your roots as being cruel, making you stay where you are, and how they do kind of hold you back, and they do. I know a lot of people that do get stuck in those roots. They get stuck there, and you can't leave, and it is hard to leave your roots. So it's hard to also get rid of who you are, who you've become. You know, you were so much a product of our environment. And a product of everything that happens to us, and that's especially true when you're younger, you know, at the age when you don't realize that, when you're just letting things come in and you're developing, and you can never, ever leave that. So it's just a very, very interesting take in the prompt, a different way to look at it, which I always enjoy. Thank you, people. All right, what do you want to do now?
Our next poem is by Marius Alexandru. It's called Blooming Love and Infinite Destruction. Would you read that one for me, please?
I sure will. Here we go. It's called Blooming Love Tree. Our roots are deeply anchored in the unmovable love soul. We grew together in the blizzards of life. Could not destroy our embrace. The sharp frost could not freeze our tears, and the deep, rough, hateful cuts could not take away our smiles. Whispers of love feed our branches and leaves, and we drink daily from the sap of endless passion. Sun breathes on our one trunk, warmth and light. Under its caressing, we dance a silent old tango, forgetting all the past seasons, keeping only the good memories and dreaming of the new spring. We extend our branches as hands in prayer toward heaven. We touch angels' wings each night and sing with the stars a song of gratitude. We bloom heart-shaped love, red flowers, because our roots are deeply anchored in the unmovable love's soil. End poem.
Excellent read. Thank you. I like the idea of it being love that is our soil that helps us grow. You know, the roots tends to be our family and where we come from. And, you know, roots can, on certain plants, grow through anything. They can survive in rocks and gravel and, like, all different kinds of things. But the things that grow best are usually in rich soil, and to have love be your soil is a really good concept. To have the whispers of love feed our branches and leaves, it's like the moisture from that soil makes its way up through the trees and allows it to grow and thrive. I think that works really well metaphorically. And then the sun also breathing the warmth and the light. Like, this really personifies the different elements that bring together the tree and makes it a beautiful, beautiful image. Very well done, Marius. Dan, how do you feel?
I do like the images well here, too, and I do like all the different this description she has, loves a movable soil, and I got to find it again. I guess you said that a couple of times, but yes, loves unmovable or unmovable loves soil. And, you know, that is something to hold on to. And that can be a huge root. So, and love doesn't have to just be like, you know, I love, I obviously think of my wife and my son and the family and so forth. It can be other things. I've contemplated when I take walks a lot, instead of the show, and one of the things I think a lot about was my college band that were going on many, many years ago now, you know, decades, unfortunately. I measure my life in decades now. that I was in this college band, and what I think of, what makes me happy is that I carry that along. You know, I certainly wasn't in love with them, but that's a lot. I mean, I have a love for them as my friends and a huge love of that time of my life. And it was one of my favorite times ever, was just playing with the band in college. Every single day we played for hours and hours, literally every day. And I always feel when I'm walking around like I carry that with me. Like I feel proud that still exists, that because it does, even though we're not playing anymore, even though, you know, nobody hears the music, to me, I'm still representing it as I walk around. And that is a kind of love, I think, and that's my roots. And it makes me happy all the time that I'm still, you know, carrying that in the world somewhere. It makes me think of that, because, again, there's different types of love. Whispers of love feed our branches and leaves as we drink daily from the sap of endless passion. I know she's talking about, you know, something different than that. And that's just such beautiful. Whispers of love feed our branches and leaves as we drink daily from the sap of endless passion. Just, you know, holding on to that as your strength. And that can definitely be your strength. Like, if you do have love in your life, no matter what's going on, you know, I again think of my family. Well, what's going on in the world, I can always go to them and just say, and they'll comfort me and be on my side, and that love is a strength that can hold on. There's a quote from, this is going to sound like a crazy quote, I'm going to say it anyway. It's a quote from one of my favorite shows, Futurama, where Fry says to Leela, you know, they're talking about where they're going to live. He's like, I don't care if we live in a bathroom bus stop. I just want to be with you. And it's supposed to be a joke, which it's funny, but I get that. We just want to be with that person. That's your strength, and nothing else matters. So it's also a very romantic, deep line. I don't know why that came to mind just now when I was thinking of love, but it did. But anyway, very, very beautiful. Marius, thank you. And, yeah.
Okay, I have to comment on your comment.
Okay.
I really love that you talked about, like, the love for your band and your bandmates and the music that you did together, because that can be roots. You know, those connections,
yep,
that we have, it doesn't have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be family. For me, it's like my medieval reenactment people. Like, somehow that has become like a kind of oddball geek family. There's lots of different ways that people can have that connection. I mean, some of our groups on All Poetry become our roots to our writing. I think that's amazing, so I'm glad that you pointed that out. And I love Futurama, too, and something about being willing to live in a bus stop bathroom with someone rather than have to be with anyone else in a mansion. I mean, that's actually one of like, the most romantic things ever. I mean, obviously, yeah. I don't want to live in a bus stop bathroom, but I still love that. Okay.
Thank you.
Robbie, your thoughts on the poem?
I like the elemental feel of it, and there's the contrast there in the elements of, like, you know, the challenge being in the harsh winter and, you know, the endurance against it, the sharp frost could not freeze our tears, and deep, rough, hateful cuts not take away our smiles, and then, you know, and how it goes on to, like, the nurturing aspect of the spring. Good memories and dreaming of the new spring, and then some more along here talks about like radiant warmth and that sort of thing. And when I came across the tango part, I kind of smiled and I really felt that line because I used to do Argentinian tango, so I directly know the feeling of that dance. So when it says under its caressing, we dance a silent old tango, like I can especially appreciate that line because I literally know how that feels.
Well, that's impressive. Argentinian tango, we have to get into that someday. That's interesting.
I cannot tango, but I love the way that interpretation is really cool. I definitely can't tango. Infinite Destruction, your thoughts?
Can y'all hear me? Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I really enjoyed this piece, and love is conquers all, as they say. And I think that, you know, a tree built on love, metaphorically speaking, is one that's well-founded. That definitely its roots are bound to be strong as long as the love is sincere on, you know, on both ends, if it's intimate love or if the love is something that is a positive basis. And I think that overall the descriptions that were given of, you know, what that love can endure and, you know, what that love has gone through and still, you know, grew into something beautiful, and I think that the writer here, Marius, did a fabulous job in this piece doing that. And I just to reiterate everything that y'all have already said, I mean, it's definitely a great piece, and I agree with everything that's been said so far.
Great comments, everybody. Our next poem is by Sea Glass, and Robbie, have I had you read yet?
I don't believe so.
All right.
Let me just go to the thing. I've got too many tabs open. I don't know why I do this to myself. here we go. The twisted yellow stick, correct? Oh, yeah, the yellow stick, or willow stick. It was a twisty green stick, and I pushed it into the ground. Between the house and garage, it grew into a very pretty twisted yellow, I don't want to keep saying yellow, twisted willow tree. And it grew, and we pruned it. And it grew, and we pruned some more, and then everything stopped. Lockdown, and the tree grew bigger and bigger. Now its rough bark trunk, booted in soft green moss, is too wide to hug and has huge, twisty, curly arms. It's bigger than the house. And in the wind, the boughs spin and creak and sing and sling curly branches at me and the dogs and my neighbors. But we love it. So do the birds, especially the big birds, because they need height. And in the summer, it's a place of green and song and food for homeless birds, big and small, because they cut down nearly all the trees and its winter silhouette with birds perched at dusk is bliss to all our eyes from our kitchen windows. But the winds get worse and shriveled a bough, and as it wailed and screeched argument with the wind through the night, I had a horrible imaginings about what I would find after the storm and hid with the dogs under the duvet, and next day called in Spencer the tree man. He said the strength of trees is in their roots, and this twisted willow roots span 20 times its circumference, and it a mighty tree and will withstand every storms. Imagine that, roots so vast the willow tickles toes with the oak and silver birch up the road. End poem.
Thank you, Robbie. I love that ending so much. The willow tickles toes with the oak and silver birch up the road. Oh, the tickling toes of the roots reaching out to the other trees in the community is just adorable. I find myself wiggling my toes as I read that line, which is kind of a strange thing. I'm looking down at my feet going, oh, yeah, I'm wiggling my toes. Tickle toes. I love the descriptions of this tree. The way that it is kind of curly and free and just kind of like out of control. Sounds like my hair in the morning. the soft green moss just makes it sound like an appealing place for the animals. It becomes like a sanctuary when everything else is cut away. This is that piece of nature that has survived in the city. And all from a twisty green stick, just being shoved in the ground by some people. And for some reason I was picturing it kids planting it, even though it does not say that that's the case. But because it's been so long that now it's grown into a big tree, I imagine that sea glass was young when it started and just got to watch the tree grow through its various stages. It's easy to envision based on this, and I think it's really great how you care about the tree by the end of this, or at least I did. The tickle toes, just adore that part. Normally, I prefer more spacing. Like, this is like a block of text, so when I first glanced at it, I was like almost intimidated, which is really strange from someone who reads like many, many novels, but I looked at it and I was like, well, that's a lot of reading. But actually, it didn't feel that long when Robbie was reading it. It felt like a short, beautiful story. So well done, Sea Glass. Infinite Destruction, what were your thoughts?
Yes, I enjoyed that Tickle Toes line, too. I thought it was a very interesting take. And when you started talking about wiggling your toes, I looked down and realized that I was doing the same thing. So I was like, I guess we can be toe ticklers together. But the twisty green stick, man, I there's something powerful about that. It's like shoving a stick in the ground and it turns into something so beautiful. Like, I don't know, and then something so strong and that gives such life to an area that didn't exist before. And then, like you said, they must have had to watch it grow from just that little stick up to, a big, beautiful tree. And the imagery here that's, you know, the story that's being told is whimsical and beautiful. And it's honestly a great piece altogether. And I thoroughly enjoyed getting to read it alongside the reader. And it was a great read as well, so great piece.
I love that I'm not the only person wiggling my toes. All right, Daniel DeShino, how about you?
Yes, I will not admit that I'm wiggling my toes, let's put it that way. I like this. I thought this was great. And there's been such different variations on the theme, which has been amazing. The twisted yellow stick is certainly a great image as well, too. There's a lot of that in here from Sea Glass. I like the birds. What I think was really great, because I think what the difference here that Seaglass was talking about is using those strong roots to protect others, right? And that's kind of what a tree does. So the strong roots, you can protect yourself from the storm, but you're actually protecting the birds, and that is a huge strength. If somebody does have their roots, you know, on a positive way, you have your roots and you're strong and you know who you are and you're taking care of yourself, that's when you can take care of other people, right? That's when you can do that. And in this sense, there the tree is taking care of the birds. But as Infinite was talking about, it is a story. And you know, sometimes that maybe it wasn't strong enough. So to me, it's those willows are reaching out to help, to ask for other help from other people. The tickling toes reaching up to the other trees to say, hey, we need help here, and making that network. And that's another strength of strong roots, is that with strong roots you have people. You know, I mentioned I mentioned my band, and that is a strong root. You know, I didn't see my band for years and years and years, and I went to see them, and it was like, we never left. We have that root. We have that brotherhood, that connection. And that's another thing about strong roots. I think Seaglass kind of touched on all of that, and I thought it was great. And I want to hear more about Spencer the Tree Man. That is definitely an unexplored character that we need a story on Spencer the Tree Man just by himself there. I want to say that. Cool. Where do we want to go? I'm assuming the next one's not going to be about Spencer the Tree Man, but so that'll be sad about that, but that's okay. We can move on anyway.
I am going to play one by Weaver of Dreams. I was just sharing our link to listen to us in the chat because there's quite a few people around. All right. So that is not what I wanted to link. Oops. Sorry, I lost Weaver's link. One second. I don't need to send people to my page. Okay. Like, it's all about me, didn't you know? Okay, here we go.
I know that.
All right. We have one by Weaver of Dreams. Take Root.
I misremember exactly how many years it's been since the world was fractured. We are few, those who survived the tragic aftermath. First, there were the gigantic slimy slugs that slithered out of the mile-long fissures, followed by what were once house mites, now the size of a house. And don't get me started on mice. Ground-level living was problematic. Tunnels or caves, suicidal. Then I looked up. We were in Sherwood Forest, foraging quietly for food. I stopped, felt the gentle wind as the leaves bowed and waved. I heard, "Come on home." This was almost perfect. The root system of the trees held the soil together, with abandoned houses nearby. Looting didn't feel right, but the alternative was death, I guess. 6-foot fences built the frames. Generators ran the vital tools, and every day new people arrived. There is now a community, high in the trees, with walkways built to connect us to each other. Winter is never an easy time, but a tree with strong roots laughs at storms, and someday soon we can come back down to earth.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Weaver. Dan, will you start the comments, please?
Of course I will, and it was beautiful. I love Weaver. Listen in for my Saturday show, Bad Company with Gray Eyes, and Weaver pretty much usually joins. She's basically the third part of that show, so you can listen to Weaver talk all night long, which is amazing. I almost want to quote the whole thing again, but I won't read it as good as her. I misremember exactly how many years it's been since the world fractured. I literally almost cried when I heard that line. That's such an amazing, like, it's one of those lines that I'm jealous. I, like, why didn't I write that line? Like, that's just such an amazing line. I won't get too deep into that one because I could go forever on it, but, I'm just befuddled by this one a little bit. Sorry. I like her reference. I'm just going down here. We were in Sherwood Forest foraging quiet for food. I stopped and felt the gentle wind. I really like the local reference. She's in Scotland, so Sherwood Forest is down in Middle England, but I like the reference of that. The leaves bowed and waved. I heard come home. That was almost perfect. The root of the tree systems held the soil together with abandoned houses nearby. And that is true. The roots held the soil together. So the roots that you have can hold the whole earth together, which I think is amazing. I heard a great quote today that said that, I'm going to misquote it, but yeah, a tree in the universe, trees are infinitely more rare than diamonds. And that is very, very true. Diamonds and gold are, if you look at the universe and you look at planets and everything, they're actually pretty common. Maybe not on the earth, but all over the universe they are, whereas trees are extremely rare. And the strength of trees the oldness and how strong they are just from being here so much longer than us is amazing. Let's go to the end here. Winter is never an easy time, but a tree with strong roots laughs at storms, and someday soon we can come back down to the earth. So almost saying those roots that you have are something that can always protect you and hold you, and you can always come back to that. And I think we've talked about that a lot today where, you know, it's something you can't hold on to. And I'll just keep harping on those memories of college and different things that I have. I certainly have bad, you know, memories I want to forget, but you always have those strong memories that you can't really, nobody can really take away from you. You know, it's something to remember when you do have a loved one, right? It's how we hold on to that, you know? I mean, you might have regrets when people pass away, but you can always hold on to the good memories that you have as well, too. Those roots can just bring you back and give you the strength. So great job, Weaver. She's amazing. She really is. And how about Infinite? Do you want to comment on this?
So I had this, I guess maybe it's an odd viewpoint when I was reading this. I thought of I know this is probably has to do with people, but for some reason I got this perspective of like these ants that were in its environment, and it all of a sudden became destroyed to them, you know, because the slugs and maybe the house mites, now the size of a house, and not even get started on the mites. And I got to thinking, man, these ants are, their area is just getting overrun and the world's getting fractured for them. Ground level living was problematic. Tunnels or caves, you know, wasn't working out. So they realized that, hey, you know, we got these trees. They're strong. They're well-founded. They're not going to go anywhere. And I don't know why. Maybe I'm just weird, but I thought of, you know, the ants taking refuge in the trees, and you know that there was many of, you know, other maybe ant piles or whatever that they didn't survive, and so they would go into those before going into the tree to get supplies or what have you, and they got into the tree and they created a new way of life. And I don't know, maybe maybe I'm seeing something that isn't there, or maybe that's just the beauty of poetry in itself, that each person could find something different, irregardless, even if this has to do with people or if it has to do with ants, which it probably doesn't, it's still a very, very beautiful piece and well-written, and I love the smoothness of her voice, the way that she read this, and it overall was a very great piece, and yeah, I enjoyed hearing it and being able to read alongside it. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes, excellent. Thank you. And you're absolutely not weird. That's a great, interesting thought. There's no such thing as weird on this website or this show. I'd much rather That's weird is me is innovative is what it is. If people weren't weird, we wouldn't have any progress or any art or anything. So I thought that was an amazing thought. And I'm going to quote Futurama again. I don't know if anybody knows the show, but Leela wanted to be normal. She has one eye, and one of my favorite script lines. Fry goes, "You're better than normal. You're abnormal." And I just like that line. So I like that line. I don't know why. Great comment. Let's go to Robbie.
Robbie actually had to go.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Bye, Robbie. Thanks for joining. So I'm already lost. Did I comment? Who's commenting? I can't remember.
I'm jumping.
Go for it.
I was kind of in between you guys because, you know, Dan was taking it as humans and then Infinite Destruction was talking about it as ants. I had like this mystical little thing, like I was picturing like fairies who were the size of ants. So I get what you were saying, Infinite Destruction, where when it's talking about like the size of the bugs and how the tunnels were no longer a thing, it makes perfect sense to me that it could be from the insect's perspective. But something about Sherwood Forest is like, it's a place where so many different little fairy tales took place that for me it was just like naturally a magical experience that's like rooted in nature. That's just me projecting my own crazy fairy tale imagination. But I imagined like these tiny creatures being overwhelmed by the way that things had changed after destruction and finding refuge in the trees, which were the sturdiest, most constant thing when everything else seemed to be washing away and changing too much. I also really like starting off with I misremember, because something about having an unreliable narrator is just, it makes it more real. I took this whole class in university where all the novels we read were unreliable narrators for whatever reason. And it made it interesting because it's sort of like real life. Like if you interview people who are at the same event, it's never exactly the same. If everyone has the same answer, it's rehearsed. I found someone with memory problems. I relate to something where it's like, this happened. I don't know when. I'm not exactly sure the context, but this happened, and it was a powerful thing. The way that she words things is really good, and her voice definitely adds to that sense of the magical of the woods to me. Like, she has that smoothness that I want her to read me a fantasy kind of audiobook. This was fantastic. Thank you for sharing it, Weaver.
But Weaver said that she wishes she based this on fairies now.
Yes, and I do want I want Weaver to read me a story. Oh, there she is. Weaver's here. Hey, Weaver, she's on the board. She's always hug a tree, folks. That is true. I'm gonna call my wife out because she doesn't listen to the show either. I wish she did, but she has this walk she goes on in a local forest, and she has this one tree she calls her hugging tree that she actually hugs when she walks by, and it's just very interesting. You're walking down this little path, and literally, like, if you trip down the path, you will fall into this tree. It's almost set up to like give it a hug as you're walking down. So yes. You should hug trees. I read somewhere that I don't know if it's true because you know how everything on social media is true, right? But I keep seeing this thing on Instagram that they've discovered how trees actually talk to each other. Trees actually can communicate via like electrical impulses through the roots. So that could possibly be a thing. Yeah, I didn't realize there's so many people on the board. I'm sorry. Robbie says Futurama rocks, and it does. And Weaver says, weird is wonderful. And Rosie's on the board. Hey, Rosie. Says, normal is boring. Abnormal is the only way to go. I agree. See, Rosie, you're going to fit in perfectly with this show because we are abnormal. But let's keep moving on with life, I think. Right? What do you want to do?
I would like you to please read Simple Erosion by Lyrical Salads.
I will. before I do that, Rosie says, everybody's saying a lot of things. I won't be able to keep up, but mushrooms help trees to communicate, by the way. Is that true? Because I'm going to have to look that up now. That is very interesting. Yeah, that's going to be my late night reading tonight. So Lyrical Salads. That's an interesting name. I like it. It's called Simple Erosion. Samuel stood at Centennial Tree, Oak Tree. His brother in likeness felled in his prime. Clarence drowned off to the bold river's bed. The lightning came down and thunder snicker snackered. A gentle rain soothed him where the liquor lacquered. Samuel started at his, and his limbs hung all paltry and violently shivered. The breeze was lime that soured Sammy, then scoured his head. The wind flowed by with increasing derision. The leaves shook loose for progressive abscission. Samuel's naked, his clothes was debris. He snapped, "I can't take it." And at the same time, the soft ground gave way, but he never fled. The cool waters carry the silt and the sand far out to ocean, away from this land. End poem.
Great read, Dan. I really like how it's personified, and you know, each of the trees has a name. Like Clarence drowned off of the bold river's bed, and it makes you care differently about something when it's named. I saw this post recently of a teacher who was saying that she can't get the kids to keep care of like the glue sticks and always bring them back to the front. But then she named all of the glue sticks. She put little labels on them. And then now if she goes like, Marcus is missing, then everyone carefully looks for Marcus and puts it back because they're worried about Marcus. So you got to name things. And then people care. it's something about human nature to look after the ones who have names. Which is why if I lived on a farm, I wouldn't be able to name any of the animals if we were going to eat them. Anyway,
you know, my wife
and
I – no, it's okay. My wife and I were just talking about this the other day where it's the same thing with faces, right? Like you just have this lump of clay, but all of a sudden you mold a face on it and now you don't want to – or it's – or whatever. It's the same thing. Right now all of a sudden you think we have this thing like it's a – like it's got a life to its own, you know? Yeah, names and faces – on things make it almost like we think it's got a soul or a purpose, which is interesting.
Yeah, once something has eyes, then it's screwed, you know? Kids bring me rocks all the time, and it's like, you know, when a three-year-old brings you a rock, it's like a gesture of love. And so I have a hard time getting rid of them. But if they draw a little face on it, even more so, I'm just like, well, now...
Yeah.
This is the being. What am I going to do? Just have a house made of them. Yes. So this brings to life the trees for me. Also, can I just say that I love the expression snickersnacked?
As soon as I said that, I thought of you. I said, I should have phased you. I was going to comment on snickersnacked. There's no way she's not.
Oh, I love the way it sounds. Snickersnacked. Lightning came down and thunder snickersnacked. Although it sounds like too fun and gentle to be thunder to me. It's like people having a fight with licorice and snickersnacking is like the slap of it hitting your face. Yes, that's right. I have licorice fights. like the breeze was lime that soured Sammy and scoured his head. Like that just is such an interesting way of putting it. His clothes was debris. And, like, he snapped, whereas, like, a limb snaps, but snap is also, like, you snap at someone. It's really cool the way that it's personified here. You know, it has it has deep meaning. It has death and pain and sadness, but it's playfully worded. So it's like we can handle the pain because of its delivery. And also, like, look at this vocabulary. Derision, abscission, that's some nice rhyming right there. Infinite destruction. What were your thoughts?
Yes, I do have to reiterate the something about giving something a name definitely does make you feel a connection to it. I love how, initially, Samuel stood a centennial oak tree. His brother in likeness failed in his prime. Clarence drowned off of the bold river's bed. And so it kind of gives you sort of a backstory of, you know, Samuel stood the test of time. His brother not so much, and Clarence didn't. Ended up falling over into the riverbed, and you know, but it doesn't mean that Samuel had an easy time. And I love the story that's built here. I did like that line of the breeze's lime that soured Sammy, that scoured his head. You know, taking all of the leaves off, the clothes being gone, is the leaves, the greenery. That was a wonderful way of putting that. This snapping app, I believe we call that a double entendre. If it was rap. this is a great piece. Again, the personification was exquisite. The vocabulary, as you said, is very well chosen. The snickersnack, I love the originality of that, and I can almost hear, you know, when lightning cracks, I can almost hear that snickersnack sound of lightning as it's cracking through the air, and that's actually the thunder that you're hearing. And so I overall, this is a really pleasant piece, and I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Infinite. Yeah, I did too. I think all the descriptions, the snickersnack and the limbs hung paltry, the breeze was lime, it all gives us this fantasy world, which is where we're in, right? The trees being personified, being these, you know, obviously you can think of like the Ents in Tolkien. but just having this, this kind of fantasy world. And Simple Erosion is a very interesting title. because sometimes it can be these simple things that can kind of take you down, right? It's just a simple erosion that happens all the time. But, you know, you wonder when I do walk through the forest, sometimes you see these trees that are falling and you just wonder how that happens. I remember just a while back, I was walking through something around here and a huge tree fell like right near us. I was walking and there was wind everywhere. It just happened to be wind must have caught this tree and the whole tree just fell over like 50 feet from me, and you're just thinking like, wow, you know, that was just for whatever, the last piece of dirt that held it together just must have fallen, and the wind came and took it over. So simple erosion, simple things, time over time can take us all down. But yeah, the personification was great, and the words took us, you guys covered it all, but it took us into this fantasy land. And I seem to never be able to get through a show without mentioning my favorite band, Rush. Rush has a song called The Trees, which you should look at, which is just literally a story about trees kind of fighting each other and coming to an agreement at the end. It's this little fantasy thing, which is really interesting. So you guys should check out Neil Peart's poem and the song called The Trees. And there's so much going on the board right now. I can't even keep up. But thanks, guys, for having fun on there. I'm seeing Harmo's on the board now. Thanks, Harmo, for coming on, talking about quoting Monty Python, I believe. They're all kind of talking about different fun things with vegetarians and and trees. So thanks, guys, for talking on the board. I can't even keep up with it, which is great. All right. Fazia is trying to tell me to stop talking because she put a new thing on the board, which I believe is by Infinite. So Infinite, that must mean that you are up for reading. Is that right, Fazy?
I mean, I wasn't telling you to shut up, but yes, Infinite gets to read next.
Okay. That's okay. I know you weren't. I'm just kidding. All right, Infinite, go for it. Yours is up.
I almost feel bad how dark this is going to be, but this is titled A Weeping Willow. Roots indebted to death in their depth are kept bereft. A tree decreed to weep its autumn leaves, cemented to cemetery, lamented lands. Despite what time's tempest swept, a guardian of garden gilded by souls whose shells they left. Though fed by the dead's carrion, it carries on, testifying life, a paragon. Destined for beauty, its duty dusts away those days sorrowfully. Yet sad to see its deeds seem to be like a winged black swan. Live and breathe, but ever be its time of admiration foregone. Yet strong it long stands upon its throne, a king undisputed. Some said the soul would leave nothing but spoil, dying slowly. But this dereliction of earth is its victoried spoils, such prophecy refuted. Founded on symboled ending of purpose, its purpose fulfilled undiluted. Gaze upon its gory glory and regale to others its regal dark story of sorrow. 'Tis a tree living upon that which is dead, but life it has indeed. For if ye recant the story of decaying decadent, thou shalt Pharaoh. This the haunting, daunting tale of the weeping willow. End poem.
Ooh, I like it. I like the darkness, and I like the way that some things grow out of death. I mean, like, you know, there are certain plants that only grow if there are dead bodies there, like not necessarily human bodies, but if there is death, that is what makes them grow. And, you know, it maybe some people, you know, have, you know, a dark history that they are growing on, and it changes them, and it makes them more likely to have a life that is difficult and sad, and it will have those weeping. And I really like, you know, I mean, like, a weeping willow is a good choice for a tree in such a situation, because they do kind of look like they're crying, but in a beautiful way. And this has such wonderful language in it, like carrion and paragon, and there was a word near the end that I was like, yeah, pharaoh. And you have that kind of like old-fashioned language of for if ye recant. It just creates that kind of gothic mood to it. I very much enjoyed this, and I like the image that you included. That's really cool. Daniel, what were your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. I loved it too. I thought it was great. And you know, yes, there are some. She's right. There are some plants that need actual like meat, right? It's not just they need a dead animal to survive. And then there's the obvious, like the, you know, Venus flytrap and those. But all plants feed off of death. That's where they get it from. And the interesting thing about plants is a lot of times they feed off their own death. Right, their own leaves are what actually can give them nutrients. Right, the leaves fall down, or the berries and fruits, or whatever, and they rot, they disintegrate, they get into the ground, and that can nurture them, and it just kind of this recycling. So, you know, my wife used to draw pictures, and she used to, you know, she still does. She's a great artist. And she has this vision of tree limbs like fire. Because it just the way fire kind of branches out and so forth, and she sees trees, you know, the fractal branching of trees like that, and by looking at it that way, she also sees it as a phoenix, which it kind of is. So the tree branches come out, and then the leaves are kind of like fire that you know, if you fast forward it, it spurts out, falls down like sparks onto the ground, feeds itself like a phoenix, right? And it just kind of rebirths, and it's that constant rebirth. But all trees feed off of death that goes into the ground and the roots. Not only, you know, think of water, but and I've read, we always think of trees as life, right? But with that metaphor, you know, trees do feed off of death a lot, and they roots can strangle, and roots can kind of reach in and kind of just do it. I mean, roots, you know, I live in the city here, but we have a lot of trees, and tree roots like destroy houses. You know, it's really hard to stop them. They can just take over everything. So I've always wondered why there weren't more, you know, because trees are, they breathe, you know, that's the reason we breathe. I mean, they are there, but always wondered why the you know, an evil aspect of trees isn't more explored in pop culture. But I do love the wording on this. And some said the soil wouldn't, and I do like that old-timey wouldn't is great. Leave nothing but spoil, dying slowly, but the dereliction of earth is its thickened spoils. Such prophecy refuted. That's amazing. I love those lines. So awesome job. And did you want to say anything about your poem while you're here? We'd love to hear from the authors if you'd like to.
So essentially I got this image, and it was a tree growing in a cemetery over, well, it shows skulls, but I got thinking, you know, a tree of a, you know, in an abandoned cemetery, it is going to dig into, you know, what's in that cemetery, and it's going to feed off of it. And people are going to look at that tree, and they're going to see that it's in a cemetery, and they're not going to think of it as beautiful. No matter how beautiful it might be, it's still there, though. You know, it's still branching out. It's still saying, hey, look at me. Here I am. You know, the soil, like you said, it's mentioning that line. It's everybody thinks that, you know, it's spoiled soil. It's not going to be any good. Nothing could really grow there. It's only representing of death. And yet here's this tree growing in the middle of an abandoned cemetery, still very much alive. And I got the thought of that, isn't it? Not that it's, the tree is inherently evil, but that it is defying the very imagery of what you would suspect from the lands of an abandoned cemetery. And so yeah, I mean, y'all hit the notes on here, and I wanted to try to push my vocabulary in this one as well. So I'm glad that y'all enjoyed the wordings that I put in there. So thank y'all for y'all's wonderful comments.
Yeah, it wasn't just. Go ahead, Daisy, please.
I was just gonna say that I enjoy the way you describe that, of like people wouldn't expect anything to grow there, and be anything other than like gross cemetery stuff, but it ended up being strong and good. And I think that can represent people who grow out of situations where it's not expected. You know, someone comes out of a ghetto situation where they did not have a lot of nurturing, and they were expected to fail, but then here they are flourishing and making the most of their situation. And you know, people are not always who you expect them to be, and you can succeed despite your circumstances. That's just what came to mind when you were talking about how the tree succeeded. So Dan, sorry, I interrupted you. What were you think?
No, I just wanted to say it wasn't even just the word choices; it was the style of the word choices. I think that just set the tone. But not only did you expand your vocabulary, but I think you kept it on the same style that Faziana was talking about, that made a great feel to it. And the idea of the abandoned cemeteries, you know, it's everybody always sees we've all seen apocalyptic movies and so forth, and it's the trees that take over. It's the trees that will win, right? If people disappeared right now, everything, you know, Forrest would take it over. I've read that it would only take like 10,000 years that there would be no, that everything would be eaten up, you know, except for maybe plastics or some certain things. And I don't know if that's true. I think with the amount of crap we've built in cities and things, I think it would take a lot longer for if people, you know, if all of a sudden the aliens came down and looked, would they be able to find us easily? But, you know, the forests, I think, would take over fairly quickly. You know, again, me owning a house, I have to constantly keep up with plants trying to take over my foundation. Like, constantly trying to get rid of stuff. They want to take over. You know, abandoned cemeteries is just very interesting. You might be walking down the in the woods or wherever you are, and you just see this beautiful forest and these trees, and all this is really good. And then you walk in, and you realize it's over, just this whole thing of death. So you know, trees are interesting that way, and I think you just capture everything great. All right, cool. So thank you, and we have 25 minutes left. What do you want to do? Do we still have some left over, or are we going on to a new prompt yet?
We have lots. So this is still to the prompt. Oh, wait, where am I now? Yes, this is to the first prompt, a tree with strong roots laughs at storms. A couple of them where we were reading the ones that people who were here, I skipped ahead, but those ones didn't specify what prompt, so I just went with it. This is the last one to the first prompt, but we still have lots from the contest. All right. And Dan, I assign you some reading. Kenneth Opal, the Bloom.
Okay, you got it. I'll do my homework. I'll have a book report by next show written.
Thank you.
Double space, 500 words in my little notebook.
I appreciate that. It's a kid's book. Excellent. It won't take you long.
Okay.
The Mycelium System by Joanna Stratford. Protecting and healing every plant, flower, and tree, fixing what is broken within the sacred family. We grow together within this system known as the mycelium system of connections and circuits of wires, maintaining life and balance and prosperity, giving and taking, helping growth within the planet to sustain life, a trade-off of surviving in this glorious event and all of its benefits. This existence that we ride, the salvation that we yearn to find, these filtered thoughts with no place to go as we are boxed in, cardboard no longer with the room to grow. We all need to work together for this necessary balance of dark and light within this, the mycelium system of wrong and right. A connection of fields, abundance of life, in which information can flow, a mutualism of benefits, of give and take, teaching us what is important in life to keep us going and healing within us what remains broken. No longer needing to bury our pain, we rise beyond this structure in which kept us grounded, this redemption within, this ever-constant change of a season within this growth of purpose. We will learn, and we will rise, and we will thrive. We group our thoughts in such a way as we continue to search within this ever-so-constant change, this existence that we come to ride, this much-needed salvation that we yearn to find. Within this magical mycelium system, we learn to survive and thrive. End poem.
Excellent, excellent job. And this is what Rosie was talking about earlier, I think. So, yes, Rosie, that I do know about the mycelium. You were talking about mushrooms. I was literally thinking about, like, you know, what I just had in my salad today. but this one, yes, I have heard, but I still have to read more on it. You've totally inspired me to do that. And, you know, mycelium is kind of network of mushrooms that's underground that kind of feeds off of old tree roots and so forth, but it is they do assimilate together. And of course, this reminds me of, which I'm sure everybody's seen, is the Avatar movies. James Cameron is such a huge environmentalist that I think it's just that's such a great movie about the beauty and power of the environment. I haven't seen the second one yet, and I really need to. I don't know why I haven't. I really should have at this point. If you haven't seen the Avatar movies, they are really great movies. So there's so much going on here. Give me a second to just kind of find something on it. But I'm losing my train of thought, but I'll just go to the end here. The existence that we come to ride, much needed salvation that we yearn to find within this magical Mycenaean system, and we learn to survive and thrive. What I thought about that whole ending is just is the connection together. So, she's talking about the the natural world, the plants and the actual Mycenaean system that's together, but I think it can be related to humanity as well too, where that is the only way to survive. I've always argued that there's 8 billion people in this world. There is no way for us to survive if we're not doing it together. There just is not room for selfishness. There just isn't. And, we all have to learn how to work together. It's the only way we're gonna make it. And it's almost kind of incongruous with that Mycenaean system where things do work together. And, just look at nature in general. Nature is balance and harmony. Even though that includes life and death, everything balances it out. And that's, again, something that we can learn about humanity is coming together and working together for one goal, which we don't seem to do. And that's kind of our biggest issue. This is great. Excellent. And let's try to go to the board real quick. Quicken said that it reminds me of Minecraft, which is just interesting. Lots of mushroom talk on the board as well too. So thanks guys for all the discussions there. And Infinite, go for it.
Yeah, so this poem just makes me think of trees talking to each other, of course, and everything being interconnected. And for some reason, I had this comical thought of trees trash talking each other. Like, would you please move over, you white oak? And don't you synapse off of me, you sickly sycamore. I don't know, I just had that comical thought, but overall, this is a very beautifully written piece, and let me get to this line that I found that I really liked. Where's it at? Right here. A connection of fields, abundance of life in which information can flow, a mutualism of benefits, of give and take. And I find that, as far as in life, is that, our interconnections with each other are, when it's a mutual benefit, it is a give and take. And, you find yourself with positive connections when there is that give and take between the two. With trees, what some trees may, believe it or not, actually not talking about trees, but we could talk about, farmland. You'll find a lot of times where farmers will plant cotton in one season and then they'll plant soybeans in that same field in the next season. And the reason being is because what the cotton leaves behind, the soybeans need, and vice versa. So it actually, both crops will fertilize the land for the one that comes thereafter. And this piece made me think of that in that, set of lines. And I think this is just a great piece to begin with, all the way through. And I like the way it's structured too, and just small snippets, some bigger than others, but it helps you really hone in on what each portion is saying. And I think it was a great piece for sure. Thank you, Stratford.
Excellent comment. Absolutely. All right, and Spazy, go for it.
I really like that that Joanna chose to write about the mycelium. And I now want to, like, start my own little village that is called Mycelium, and it's, like, about building community and all being connected. I'm going to have, like, a little hippie place that people are going to worry is a cult, but it's not. I think this is beautiful, and it works on a literal level, but I also think it can be metaphorical for human connection, you know, something that we can strive for, to learn from the way that plants connect. It's just a beautiful, beautiful concept. And there's one stanza, where is it? The second last one, it creates like this little arc, the way that it's formatted, where it starts off longer and the lines get shorter and shorter. And it just, that feels intentional as it wraps up. And that stanza ends in change, because, you know, sections of ourselves and our timelines and of, you know, society eras can end in change, but it's going to start a new one right there. It doesn't end with the change. Then it goes on into a new existence. So I thought that was good, that it didn't end with change, but that little section did, and then it flourished again. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it worked for me. So thank you, Joanna, for sharing that. Infinite Destruction just left.
All right, and then there were two. Thanks, Infinite, for joining. Yeah. That was great.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Where am I?
He said he's going to run. Said he's going to run, but he's still going to chat on the board, so the board is still hopping.
Board is still a party. All right, Dan, I'm going to put you to work again, because I'm mean like that. But it's going to be fun work, because you get to read the poem by Blue Ride 76.
It is. I'm excited. That's not work. That is fun, so thank you. Excuse me. Blue Ride 76, called Redemption. Excuse me. Beyond moors high and dark, where none brave on a lark, on heathen slopes bare, she stood in a cold dare. Bones and horns black, shaded in sunshine's lack, from within a deep dream, rare flowers allure a scream. Waiting on her night's beds, the eerie fragrance treads, all her rotted roots lurk, invited to come and seek. Herbs and shadows creep, graze where you hear her weep, allure to the prequel of a trap, ready for a treacherous rap. Grandma's always worn, more beyond the ghosted barn, of her disdain to steer clear, lies angels spurned to fear. Warnings from God's despite, to a devil's who gave the respite, her spirits and fairies the devil culled, when the gods indifference spelled. On a cruel winter, her final green lost, story of what a queen's sympathy did cost. Like a rebel she stands, in a fiery temper reaching hands. Beware the shadows that fall, in anger she plants in gall. Little thorns umpteen, like the gloom creep unseen. Little girl ran up the steep, when shadows fell asleep. Touch the fallen queen, to skies pray in mercy keen. Show her the true mirrors, forgive all her errors, because Granny also said, healing the tempests away led. Let the green sprout in wisdom bloom stout, cause beyond the dark lands, farms green she garlands. There the queen found grace, seeds of her sweat embrace, bestow flourishing inflorescence, lands gifted in heavenly fragrance. From the deeps of her seed, beauty that hidden smiles freed, back to her gently they flew, and the first shoot slowly grew. End poem. And I just want to read her. She said, this is about empathy and redemption, a gift from innocence. That's interesting. She says, it's about the tree that gave shelter to the devil and whom the devil squandered, and then the gods abandoned. She stands alone in anger and those who go near will get the same anger planted within them as bad things. Now the girl goes and prays for her redemption. She makes the tree understand that her very seeds that flew away a long back now given beauty and smiles elsewhere, and the fragrance gifted to her, she returns to her, and then the tree sprouts again slowly. So excellent. Thank you for the commentary on that. Faziana, go for it. I can almost see what you're going to comment on as far as some of these words, but let's see what you say.
I am just, like, speechless. This was such an interesting storytelling poem, but also so full of images. I like that ending of, you know, they come back to her gently, and then the first shoots slowly grew. The idea of it all kind of starting over again, but in a positive way. The rhyming is really well done all throughout this. And let's see, where is it? The languages of it, it has that kind of spooky gothic air, which makes sense later in the AN when she's talking about it being where the devil was. But when we first started reading, I was like, oh, it's too bad Infinite Destruction left, because I think he would have really enjoyed the way that it has, like, that gothic feel, the bones and horns of black, and, the being on the moors and in the dark. I like the rare flowers allure scream. So it's like, The allure of the flowers screams, but it's not, like, allure is usually kind of like a quiet but, like, strong pull, and that makes me think of, like, the sirens of Greek mythology, when it's their screaming, because their sound is so alluring that the people come and they, like, are destroyed because they're like drawn in too much. And when the rare flowers allure scream, that's what I was picturing, the sirens bringing the ships to crash. And allure, the prequel of a trap. I like that it's not just a trap, it's a prequel of a trap. It's like there's a step before that treachery. There's a lot of intricacies in here, and some really interesting wording of things. I'm trying to find the examples because it's a longer piece, and I kept going to highlight something, and then I would get lost in what you were saying. just a beautiful piece. I really enjoyed it. What did you think, Dan, as you were reading it?
I did too. I was really caught up in the words, at which I still am. It was just a fun read. It just poetically, just great. You know, I'm a fan of that. You know, I'm certainly as a poet, I get into lyrics. But believe it or not, when I listen to music, I don't listen to the lyrics. I never have. When I first listen to music, it's always the music, and to me, it's the musicality of the lyrics. If you listen back to I am going somewhere with this, I promise. If you listen back to the Beatles and some of the older music like that, a lot of times they did not. It seems like they're writing deep poetry, but they didn't. They just wrote words that sounded good, that musically made sense, and they'd write these kind of fun little catchphrases. And even though this is very, very deep, Lou Wright writes very deep. I also just like the musicality, just the way it felt. It was just interesting to read. Like, I think this would make an interesting song because of that. So that's what I was actually caught up in at first. I like the, just because I'm always interested in religion and spirituality, I like the talk about the gods and the devil. And from her comments, I didn't know about that. It's about the tree that gave shelter to the devil, whom the devil squandered and then the gods abandoned. I don't know if that's actually, I haven't heard of that as part of modern religion mythology. And I'll have to look into that. I know that the devil was, you know, Lucifer, right, rebelled against God and fought, and then was sent down to hell. But I didn't know anything about a tree that was on there too. So that's kind of interesting to me. Warnings from God's despite to the devil who gave the respite. For spirits and fairies, the devil called one the gods in different spelled. And on a cruel winter, her final green lost, story of what the queen's sympathy did cost. Great idea to really have that, that the cruel winter is where the green was finally lost. I think that's a really great imagery for, you know, some of those crueler winters when the green does go away, right? The cruel winters, everything goes away. And it always amazes me how the springtime can come back. Sometimes with just so much snow here in New England, I mean, I can't talk about it to my friends in Canada who get a lot more snow, but the fact that the green can actually come back. But sometimes finally it's that cruel winter that can almost destroy the green of the world. I thought was a great image there too. Yeah, excellent. And Quicken says, fear, disdain, and redemption. Look beyond fear and disdain and can help find through the transformation through compassion. A reminder of the cycles of nature and humanity, rebirth and beauty, can be found in the most unexpected places. Very, very true. Thank you, Quicken. All right, we have 5 minutes left. Do we have a little brevity or something, or what do you want to do? Do you want to just chat, or can we squeeze a poem in?
We have one brevity. Okay, I've been looking through them trying to find what would fit. All right, so we're going to do one by Sour J, and this is to, just to all the prompts together. Okay, cool. Sour J, my buddy. Dead roses. The roses sit in the starlight of the lounge, choking on their soilless mud. They gag in reflex like a prostitute, a butterfly opening its mouth. Slowly, their veins suck out the grit of its own stem, blooming teenagers trapped in a plastic box. They eat themselves, swearing revenge against me. End poem.
All right, great. Very interesting way to end. Roses sit in the starlight of lounge, choking on their soilless mud. Really, really interesting. And she put it down as death and humor, sad and nature, which I thought was interesting. And the roses, which you always think is beautiful, right, sitting in the starlight of the lounge, but then kind of choking and gagging, a butterfly opening its mouth, slowly their veins suck out the grit of its own stem. So, thinking of the dead roses, and then like what I talked about before, like the newer plants kind of eating itself, right? They eat themselves, swearing revenge against me, which is really interesting. Almost like taking itself and wanting to renew itself, being mad at the way that it lived its life, and then coming back again. So there's a lot in here in this. Really interesting. I like Sour J a lot. And this is a great little brevity. We got 3 minutes left, so I'm sure you want to give a comment, and then you can take us out, Faizy.
Yeah. I like how this kind of calls out the humans on how we treat the plants. The roses are in the lounge choking on just choking because we either cut them and they're dead, living their last little bit of life without proper soil because they're maybe in a vase of water, for our beauty, and they're gagging trying to survive, or they are in those plastic box. When it says in the plastic box, I'm picturing the little black thing that they're in when you get them at a store to buy them. And they're the blooming teenagers, so they're not just seeds anymore. They're starting to come up. They're starting to look cute, so people want them. But they're in these plastic boxes that are preventing them from being their true natural self. And they get put where people think that they should grow. So I really think it's a strong statement within this brevity. And that is all the time we have. Thank you so much, Dan, for being awesome. Thank you to Robbie and to Infinite Destruction for calling and commenting with us, and to everybody who wrote for us and everybody who's been on the board. You've made it a fun night, and we have quite a few carryovers for next time. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. It was great. Take care, everyone.